This is a Pinball News production.
If you guys don't know me, I'm Ron. I'm from Dr. Scott's. I've been working for Scott almost 20 years. I've started with him since 96. I worked part-time and went to full-time in 2001. I'm a computer programmer by trade and also electronics background in engineering. So it's basically all the stuff makes sense to work with pinball. So that's basically behind my side. I tinker with old stuff, including machines. But obviously, since Scott's not here, he had a whole seminar written up for the topic today. But fortunately, he had some things to say, you know, basically, what were they thinking? And I only brought two things that I experienced on the field that I found, which was like, you know, the typical people fixing flipper rubbers with electrical tape. I'm sure you've probably seen that, Dave.
Yep.
Actually, it works.
It's kind of funny. I just got... we have a little place in Buffalo called Pocketeer Billiards where I have 24 pinball machines. And one of the customers traded in a machine. I put it right in location. And then we had a league, and they pointed out that there's black electrical tape up and around the rubbers. I'm like, are you kidding me? And I'm looking, and yeah, sure enough, the previous customer had done that.
Oh, I thought that was your work.
No.
You're zip ties, right?
Yeah, okay. Zip ties.
Gotcha, and gotcha. Okay, good. Well, I'm not guilty of that. I've never done zip ties. So. But yeah, that was just one of the funniest things I've seen. I did post a picture. I don't know if you guys are in the pinball forum on Facebook. I think it was... I can't remember whose forum it was. I posted a picture on about repairing a machine. It was a time machine I actually worked on earlier this year, and they had their electrician come in and thought they knew what they were doing. They actually bypassed the two fuses on the power supply, wrapped it around the fuse holder, wondered why their machine kept resetting every time they'd touch it. Turned out they did almost $300 worth of damage to the computer board because it kept spiking and destroyed every special solenoid in the matrix on the upper corner. We noticed the fuse was missing, put the fuse back in, and it started smoking. And so that's not a good option. Unfortunately, that did a lot of damage to their board, but I didn't bring that picture, obviously, because I didn't have a PowerPoint, but that would be cool to see because it was just devastating to look at.
Was that a Williams System 6 or 7?
Time machine. That would be Data East.
Oh, Data East. Oh, yeah. So back in time. That's
up in the corner.
Yeah.
They basically wired everything to the back, including cutting. In fact, I showed Eric in the room the picture, and it was devastating. I'm sure you could agree.
Data East, with their famous fuse clips, I remember going into a service call where the person had taken a zip tie and zip tied the connectors together so it would hold the fuse.
I'm sure with soldering would do the same thing too, but...
Well, yeah.
In a tight
or a little hot glue.
Yeah. Hot glue, there you go. But that was an interesting one. Has anybody seen anything weird in their field that they've been doing work on?
How many pinball repair people do we have in the audience?
That's a good question. Yeah.
Okay.
Nothing strange that you've seen. Well, that's good.
Well, give it some time. You'll find them. You'll find them. And then you'll be like, okay, so when I come across that, there's two terms I like to use. There's called a street operator. A street operator is a guy who's going to try to keep that game running no matter what. And actually, that's a term in the coin-op industry. So if a street operator sold a game to somebody, you might run across little hacks that, you know, a street operator wants to keep that game running, even though it's got one light bulb and, you know, duct tape around the plunger lanes or something like that. But he will figure out a way. And Ron showed me one a year ago where they had taken a bridge, and the bridge blew. So they took the diodes and they rewrapped new diodes around the bridge to get it working.
It worked.
And it worked.
It's...
Because basically a bridge is all it is all those diodes in a metal case with the glass over the top.
Yep. Epoxied.
So, yep. Epoxy, that's right.
Yeah, I've seen some good ones, and I'm not afraid to say that I've used a few of them in that tight pinch, because when you're on the field and you don't have that piece, you go back in your memory banks. I mean, doing repairs with Scott for 20 years, I've seen a lot of crap. And, well, I could say other four-letter words, but...
It's early in the morning.
My goal is to strive to make a machine as perfect as possible. And, you know, when we go through every machine in our store, I mean, I got just a simple list here, and I use a checklist every time I go through it. And I'll share that with you guys all the time, every year, because I will pound it in everybody's head. I mean, this stuff has to be done. Especially if when you deal with, you know, System 3 through, I would say, even up to the WPC series, a lot of this stuff is, you know, just general fatigue and parts are wearing out on these, you know, power supplies and so forth. Don't be afraid to get in there and check out things, make sure they're working correctly. Our big culprit with, like, System 3 through 9 and even 11, you've seen cold solder joints all over the place. And there's times that, you know, they just don't work right when it's not making good connections. And I've seen people stuff things in there just to make the pinch the connection to make it work properly. But if they don't spend the extra 10 minutes to reflow, you know, solder joints, it's not worth the time to keep the machine running.
And that's usually a good little trick. If you go up to a machine and it's not working correctly, wiggle the connections. If it all of a sudden comes alive, you know you have a cold solder joint. Take the board out, spend a few seconds, put a few drops of solder on it, reflow those pins, you're going to cut your time down. But I've seen operators use hot glue in places to make sure that it would work correctly. A little louder.
And that's not solder, that's for sure. I mean, they do make a hot glue that's very close to a solder with a metallic base in it. Because sometimes you can use it for displays.
Yep.
Very similar to the heating elements on your back window repairs for fixing traces.
So what other System 3 problems have you run across with that?
The big ones that I've been doing with right now, I've been seeing the last 2 years in the store, power supplies. These capacitors are definitely on their last legs. I mean, they're already 30 years old. Everyone that comes in, Scott will work on one on the route, and he's like, well, what do you want me to bring in? I was like, bring it all in. Don't hesitate. And bring the computer board, bring the driver board, and bring the power supply. He's like, why the power supply? Trust me, bring it. So we go through and actually reflow all the joints on that one, and I actually take off the old capacitors and put modern caps on there, including modifying the board so we can actually fit them on there and put a standard subcap on there, and it works just fine. Replace the diodes.
Yeah, that big yellow capacitor on the system, Williams 3 through 7s, I always replace those. That's, you know, you want to make sure your voltage is good, and like you said, it's 30, 40 years old, it's going to need to be replaced.
Yep, yeah, exactly. I haven't really seen many problems with System 11 other than the power supplies are garbage. I hate to say that. But as long as they're well-maintained, I'm not going to knock Williams for that, but as long as it's well-maintained, it'll work just fine. Similar problems with the System 3 through 7 could be found on the System 11's power supply. But that one there, we've actually gone through and, typical reflow. But I also go through and rebuild the high-voltage area as well because they are also, like I said, running on borrowed time. And everybody knows about the magic 39K resistors. And when they dip below, they get those fatigue displays. I mean, yeah, if you can spend the extra 20, 30, 40 cents and put brand new ones in there with half-watt resistors, you're going to extend the life of them. You know, I've seen people actually lower the value, of course, to save the displays, but they did that on the Zeniers and get it down to, like, you know, I think it's like the SafeMark 90 volts before it will cut out and start flickering. I mean, I can go into other tricks, you know, like on the WPC series, which resets, like Rob's game the other day with his Indiana Jones. I mean, a lot of people like to go through and replace bridges and the capacitors on the driver board, but I approach the shotgun approach and go to the computer board because the computer board is actually doing all the dirty work. Mm-hmm. And if it resets, does anybody know about the Magic Watchdog transistor on the board?
I'll say no.
Okay. Well, same thing in the pinball forum. I've explained to people that, you know, these computer boards actually can run right around 4.3 volts. You don't necessarily have to have 5 volts to run it properly because that magic ASK chip in the center is a 3.3 volt architecture. They only put that watchdog in there as a safety precaution so the computer will catch it and reset the machine properly so it doesn't burn up things like coils. I've gotten, you know, I've actually done it on every machine that I get in the store, is I lower that threshold to 4.2 and I've never seen a reset problem. And I think the cost of it's probably like 70 cents.
Okay, so I'll bite. How do you do it? How do you lower it?
It's magic. It's magic. Changing the values of the threshold. I think Williams stocked it at 4.6.
Right.
And at 4.6, it drops below that, and there's your magic. Poof, it resets.
So how did you lower it to 4.2?
Well, that's for changing one single transistor.
Okay.
Right underneath the board. You see the little ASK chip? You'll see a little transistor. It's the only transistor on the board that's actually, I think there's one more that's in the lower corner, but that's the magic one I changed. I can actually, if anybody wants the number, I'll get you the number for the transistor and drop it down. Trust me, it saves a lot of headaches, and I've not seen a problem yet.
Okay. See, with like those where I've run across with the WPC, I usually do the little trick with the LM335 on the power board, and I make sure that thing's pushing out 5.5 at all the time, putting a resistor across the ground on that thing. So that
pull it down, make it work harder.
Yes.
Exactly.
And then I know it never resets, even if I'm 60 miles away from the game.
Exactly. Because we don't like machines down, especially like you run a routes. And
you run a route.
I run routes too, and we don't like to see these games down. We get the customer call at the pizza place, hey, they can't play their damn game. They can't eat their pizza. I was like, that's not my problem.
And trust me, this is not, sorry, this is not during the hours that we normally would be working. So this will be the pizza place at 10 o'clock at night, and it's 40 miles from the place, and the guy's screaming that you got to get out there to fix it. Or at some bar, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're screaming about some problem. That's the joys of being an operator, or getting a text message when you're just sitting there. So it's just a real pain in the rump.
Yeah, I mean, we do jukeboxes in our field, and you know, it's nothing like getting, you know, the notification on your cell phone that, hey, you got a problem with your bill acceptor. It's like, are you serious? It's 1:30 in the morning. Let it slide. Have a few more drinks. But these machines nowadays are getting so damn smart. I'm surprised that maybe this might be something for some of the new manufacturers to slip in there, you know, since Wi-Fi and everything is so readily available, maybe put troubleshooting routines in there that can email the operator and say, hey, I got a problem.
So. Yeah, they'll probably raise the rate on the jukebox just to cover that cost,
yeah,
like they like to do.
Yep.
But
yeah, going back to some of the routines that I see, you know, I don't see many problems with White Star and SAM machines, but the big ones we've been seeing a lot of stuff with Bally and Stearns, your early stuff. I'm sure you guys own a few of those out here, stuff like KISS and stuff. I've restored enough of those this year to get sick of, and I've done the typical routines, and the resetting, you know, replacing sockets, reburning EEPROMs, because I know a lot of people don't believe in bit rot, but it does happen. I'm sure you've seen games glitch because one bites off in the ROM.
Mm-hmm.
Same idea with those systems as the damn cold solder joints.
Or the TurfCon pins, or the lack of that on the power supply.
Yeah, the stuffed pin sockets.
Yes. Yeah, a little extra to keep them run.
Oh, yeah. I've seen too many of those. But that's stuff that I see every day, and I go through it. I mean, it hurts to see machines modified so they're not supposed to be run that way, but if people spend the extra time, that makes them run smoother. I mean, have you guys have any questions about any type of machines, anything that you could throw at us? Because I'm open to discussion here.
Yeah, we got a few minutes to take Q&A.
Yeah.
So.
What about converting older games to LED bulbs?
How do I solve that problem with flickering? Absolutely. In fact, what I've done on those is I know they sell the aftermarket boards now to eliminate flicker. But unfortunately, when I came across, you know, 10,000 plus resistors, I think the magic number, I think, is 1.5K, I think, on the resistor. Because in a lot of Bally's, they need that extra oomph to prevent the flicker. And I've been actually just soldering them in line with the ground post on the bulb to the actual, I wouldn't say anode side of the bulb, because it's not a it's not truly an LED until you put the bulb in it. But it doesn't affect the performance of the game if you put an actual bulb back in it.
Right.
But coming across these, you just solder these on there and it eliminates the flicker. But yeah, it's a little bit of work, but a lot of those Bally games never had that many lamps on it to begin with, so we can spend the time. I've seen someone else recommend putting an inline resistor. I think I did this on a Xenon with the actual strobe tube for the tube shot. And they actually modified and put a resistor in line with the power, which I thought was brilliant. The old times, I was actually putting LED resistor all together as one unit and building it that way. And putting them in there and just socket it and put a little bit of hot glue on there to prevent the bulb from moving anywhere. Now, I've actually used Century paste now.
That's right.
It's blue. It matches.
Yeah. I still like using hot glue every once in a while. It's a quick fix.
I like quick fixes, but not in this case, especially with lamps.
No. I use LEDs a lot. You know what? I'm still just getting over from GI. I still like putting incandescents in the GI just because it gives it the right color. I hate looking at a game and it looks just... I mean, I've tried, and I like Coin Taker's new frosted, warm. It's a little bit more, but if you're going to do it right, you pay the money. Don't be cheap, you know.
Yeah.
If you're going to put the LED in it, put it in there. It's going to last a lot longer.
Yep.
You know, you can get the cheap ones from Pinball Life and put those in, and then it just doesn't look right, and you're paying for it down the road. And, you know, you got it all apart. You're shopping out the game. Do it right the first time.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of LEDs on our games in the shop, and I think Scott probably spent like $2,000-$3,000 in LEDs and already went nuts with them. Hate to say it, but he's putting in LEDs in everything, and he wonders why. Why is the stock deplenishing? I was like, I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, you got all those games with all those LEDs in it.
He's like,
let me ask you, Ron. Do you guys charge a little extra for having a game with LED out?
Not really, because it's all embedded in the cost of restoration, which I think is pretty fair to the customer. I mean, I can't see charging a person extra for putting LEDs in something that should have had a light bulb there to begin with.
Right.
I mean, it'll benefit them in the long run. They won't have any problems with it. Long use.
See, sometimes I don't have games ready to be sold right away, and I have a customer who'll come in and he'll look at the game and says, "Oh, I like that game. I've been wanting that game for a long time. Can you restore it?" And then I'll, you know, figure it out and I'll give them a price compared to having a regular bulb or LED, and then I'll show them the two comparisons.
Yeah, I've done that with, you know, like do one half of the play field, like just like maybe the small section, lower apron area, you know, LED, normal incandescent. See, what's your favorite flavor? What do you like? I've been theming a lot of games with actual different colors in different areas, which is great because you can have the variety of bulbs to play with.
Just be careful with that, because when you're working, well, not you, but others, when you're working on a game, you've got bright lights above you, and it looks really good with those colors. However, if you turn the light off, like some people are going to have a dark basement or in an arcade or wherever it's going, it's going to look a lot darker, and you're going to be like, and they call that color bombing.
It looks crappy.
Yeah, it does look crappy.
Yeah, experiment, look at it, turn the light off, play with it. Is it going to look okay for you? And to me, on the other side, I look at it in the way is it going to look okay for the customer? If the customer looks at that as like, oh, it looks like crap, I was like, why? Because it's not original. The one thing that does bother me, though, with LEDs is still like that slight flicker. I'm real sensitive to flickering, not in that epileptic way, but it'll drive me nuts to where I get a headache. So
yeah, go ahead.
What's that again?
LODC.
LED OCD
board. Who makes that again? Yeah.
Not me. I don't have any LEDs.
Who makes the board again? Is that?
His website is LEDOCD.
Oh.
Okay.
And it's supposed to. I bought through my booth yet. It's supposed to control the flicker
of it. Okay. Yeah. Very similar to the resistor idea where they're dragging down the lines. It's very similar to like the idea where they're dragging down the resistors to the lines to make it smooth out the thing so it's not so harsh on the eyes. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
What that board is describing is it's basically a computerized board that interfaces from a signal from a CPU. It goes
LED and CPU, and interprets that signal and provides a bell-shaped curve.
So it's taking
on the LCD opposed to a stair step device.
Taking care of the strobing problem.
Well, also regular light bulbs don't come on like this.
Right.
Right.
Like this, where LEDs are just on or off. You know, so what it does is it provides an interface to bring them up smoothly and down smoothly. So it provides a more light bulb-ish type look.
Very brilliant. Very brilliant.
They also have one more plank that you can control individual light bulbs.
That sounds exciting.
How much?
It's a lot of money for the
whole thing. I just was wondering that. Usually...
Have you figured out how to make one yet, Clay?
No.
Damn. Can we disassemble that sometime in the shop and maybe we can make one?
It will be on Pinball Ninja.
I'm pretty good at etching boards.
Toothpicks and bubble gum.
Sure. Got plenty of LEDs. Let's go.
Just out of curiosity, I like to ask these questions sometimes. How many people are members of the Pinball Ninja in the crew here? How many people actually, besides myself? We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We all know who Clay is, and he does a wonderful job. I'm always waiting for the next video just to find out what little trips and ticks. I love that new oscilloscope, that pocket oscilloscope that you showed last week. I was like, what is this cell phone thing that he had? And needless to say, I have my own now. It wasn't going to be that long.
Yeah. Anybody else have any quick questions?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
They've never not mentioned a basic owner who can replace something, or they've blown out something, but not get an old machine and try to repair it. And I know it's board problems. Just do I buy a new board, or do I send it to whatever repairs? So is your first take in general, like certain boards that you should do, or?
Myself, personally, I do all my board repairs myself, but...
Same here.
The average user would probably send it out if they're not comfortable with soldering. I'm sure we've seen botched soldering jobs. It looked like a kid did it. But.
They used a wood-burning tool to do the soldering, I think, sometimes.
And, I meant more like the concept of just, my sense was a good person to repair. Using an old board that's been repaired versus using a newer, like, can I address that?
Go ahead, Clay.
So my feeling is, given that the cost may end up to be very similar, like for instance, buying new rocket gloves, CPU, or having your own one repaired, there's probably a differential. Maybe it's a little bit more for new boards, but I'm finding that a lot of the new boards, though well designed, they use newer style components and stuff that's unfamiliar. So, like when I get a game into the shop that has, you know, X-thin power supply, I find it very difficult to repair because my part supply is based on commercial boards. So when that stuff comes in, I got to get a new schematic. A lot of which stuff is surface mount, closely approvable. It just becomes a lot more difficult to repair. Also, a lot of these guys don't test their boards as well as I would like. Another instance, a guy had a run in the shop, a RoboCop. And it had an extra power supply. And it had this terrible pump in the sound system. And we went through everything on the soundboard, the speakers, you know, the power supply was the only thing left. It was this extra power supply. So I took up Data East power supply out of another gate from a similar era, and also the sound problem went away. And so it was all based on this extra power supply. They didn't catch what the designer is tested in moral account or whatever. So I'm just finding that you're always better off fixing the original boards unless they're just so destroyed that they can't. I mean, God bless these guys that are doing, you know, reprobable. It's great. But I think it's going to cost you less. And I think it helps the originality of the game better in the long run. I think repairability for the most part is going to be better.
And I can't agree with Clay on that because what I like is, as an operator too, I will have like Rotten Dog boards in backup okay, just for, you know, in case I have a problem, and then I put it in the machine, and then I take it and fix the original board. Because I hate to say this, Rotten Dog boards sometimes, their longevity is not there.
Yeah, I've only had like one real issue with the Rotten Dogs. I've gotten one or two that came in that never realized that the DMD was actually shorted, and it did so much damage to the board where I had to shit can the board because it was that bad. It did so much damage to it, and pardon the French, but it's early in the morning too. I've only other seen one other issue with them is that I don't know if it's the way their 100-volt line runs with the display, where new DMDs would, you know, be nice and solid, but when they dim, like in Data East machines, how they would dim the pixels, it would do a cause a nasty flicker. I don't know if you've seen anything like that, Clay, in yours? Right.
You know, whatever it's like, everything is a little bit different, and I think like the mix between old boards and the new boards sometimes it just isn't as
smooth
transition as you would like. And if something is on the edge, I think the original products always work better because that's because they're married in how they were designed.
Yep.
So correct.
I just like to stay with the original board, you know, unless you're just in a situation where you have no choice.
Yeah.
Board sets completely gone. That's the best way to go.
And then maybe change out all the board sets. You know, like I mean, Altec has that nice little section for all those Baileys.
Yeah, I did a KISS that way because all the boards were missing except for, you know, you got the soundboard and then the power supply. Did everything all brand new.
Yeah, the only exception to that rule I would say is Baileys once.
Yeah.
Pretty much that one you pretty much got to get it.
Yeah, exactly.
But everything else, like, you know, even those all fronts with Valley Altec, I hate those things. I do not like those.
Yeah, they're a pain to work on if you have to.
I'd much rather have the X35, maybe the X17, or, you know, than an Altec.
Just out of curiosity, Clay, have you played with the Pascal board for the system ones?
I have not. They're just, you know, they're hard to get, and they're just really expensive.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm thinking about doing that, but trying to fix the original Sinbad System 1 boards right now myself. So,
well, it looks like Rob's signaling me to get off the stage. I think he wants me to move on.
Well, it's time.
Yeah,
for
it's time for us to go. But hopefully next year, if you guys want to see stuff on like repairs and troubleshooting, we can do that in a lot more detail. Like I said, me putting it together at the last minute with, you know, Scott being absent, I think we did fine.
And if you guys have any questions during the show or something, you can ask somebody else. No, you can ask us.
We're through the show. I'll be here till Saturday evening, and we'll go from there. Thank you, Rob.